It's time to wake up with a nice cup of morning roast. Featuring
Fillmore's finest, Monte Hill. The pride of the Excelsior, Joe Bunch of Boy Shasky. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, the morning roast.
History. Tonight, the first father-son duo to play together in an NBA game. This is all in the family. And what a celebration for the James family.
Oh, baby, oh, baby, oh, baby, oh, baby. Basketball is back in. You know what? History was made last night in Los Angeles as Ian Eagle on the call for TNT Sports. It was good to have hoops back, and it was good to see, you know, some good ball yesterday. You know what? Shout out to the Lakers beating up on the T-Wolves. I think the T-Wolves are going to have to tweak some lineups here and there moving forward. But history was made there late in the second quarter. LeBron James and Bronny James sharing the court together. And I'm not going to lie, man, seeing Griffey there with his dad, Shasky. Shasky's back. He's working from home. He's doing well. Look at him. He's smiling. I think he's smiling. He's actually wearing a 49er hat, which I'm shocked at, considering how he feels about the Niners. We'll get into that. But Bronny and LeBron sharing the court down there at Crypto.com Arena, also known as Staples Center. We all know that. But what a cool moment, man. First time father-son has shared a court in the NBA basketball game. We've seen it in baseball. We've seen it in hockey. Never seen it in basketball before. What up, Shasky?
What's up, Bonte? And thank you for getting me back on here. And do I have to be this guy? Do I have to be the guy? Like, seeing the Griffeys on the sidelines. Ken Griffey Sr. was 40-something years old when Seattle brought him in. They needed veteran leadership. Ken Griffey Jr. was the number one overall draft pick. Flew through the minor leagues. I believe had 16 or 17 home runs at 19 years old, okay, in like two-thirds of a season. The number one overall pick. To equate and to see them on the sidelines and equate Bronny and what LeBron said. LeBron is on the level of the Griffeys. But, like, I hate to be this guy. It was a cool moment, but it was fabricated.
You know, they were up
14. No, it was, Bonte. It's okay to admit it. It was, no, it's okay to admit it.
Wow, you're so down. You're so down on LeBron. Considering how much you wanted LeBron and Bronny. Wow. Wow. It was a cool moment. Whether it was fabricated or not, it was a cool moment. J.J. Redick found a way to get it done right out of the rip. First game of the season. Lakers are up 16 points. Hey, let's go ahead and enter Bronny James in for Hachimura. Still a few minutes here. And let him get some run in his first ever NBA game. He didn't play again. But I thought it was cool. The sounds of the game when LeBron said, hey, man, you ready? Remember, the intensity's different. Let's play carefree. Don't worry about it. Just play. I thought you would be excited about something like that. Wow.
Well, because it's a curated moment that has been manipulated by LeBron. If this is a small family business, it's a different situation. It's the NBA. It's a meritocracy. Like, come on, man. Like, what are we doing? Like, and again, there's a difference between what the Griffeys did and there's a difference from what LeBron has done. It's a totally different situation. And people could say that LeBron has built up the equity to be able to pull this off. Yeah, he has. He basically runs the Lakers. And so good for him to have that power. I felt bad for Bronny. It felt very curated and manipulated.
Why? He got to live out a dream of being in the NBA. He got to live out a dream of being in the NBA and playing on an NBA court. He's fine. Bronny seems well. Bronny seems like he's handled the situation perfectly. For a kid who didn't play much at USC, for a kid who probably shouldn't have been drafted, I think Bronny, there's nothing to feel sorry about with Bronny.
I think he's got imposter syndrome written all over his face, and I feel bad for the young man.
Why would you say that?
Because I'm looking at somebody who's living vicariously through their father's dreams, and that's what ends up happening. And LeBron is pulling the ultimate AAU parent, and I see this from a different prism than most. And I know that he's built up a ton of equity in terms of what he's able to do that others can't. But this isn't private profit business where I separate it. This is professional sports, and yeah, he can be on the roster, but it doesn't mean that like you have to curate the moment on opening night on TNT. It felt very fake.
We see nepotism in all walks of life all the time, whether it's pro sports, whether it's pro broadcasting, whether it's professional broadcasting. It's all good. This happens in sports. So I don't feel sorry for Bronny. I think Bronny's going to be fine. LeBron James has been his father his whole life. If anybody knows how to handle that, it is Bronny. It is Bryce. It is her daughter who just turned 10 years old yesterday. That's the life you chose. I mean, it's not the life he chose. He was born into it. And so he knows the situation. And so I don't feel sorry for Bronny. I think Bronny's going to be fine, whether he makes it in NBA or not. I think the kid's going to be okay personally. He'll be able to find his lane, whether it's in the NBA or outside of the NBA. So I don't feel sorry for Bronny. I think Bronny's going to be fine.
Well, I was listening to Brett Boone speak about this. So he gets brought up through the system of the Seattle Mariners. His dad was invited, essentially, to training camp or whatever, you know, spring training with the Mariners. And they knew that he was going to be a third-generation major leaguer, the first ever to be a third-generation major leaguer. And Brett Boone could have been given a token opportunity to come up and play with his dad in, like, a spring training game. And, again, a spring training game. And what he was expressing is, just his opinion, and people can disagree with this, that's fine, but his opinion was like, yeah, I don't really want to put my dad through that, and I don't want to put myself through that, because I'm going to have to walk back into that locker room and into that clubhouse at some point, and I don't want to have imposter syndrome. I want to be able to tell everyone that I made my appearances on my own merit, and every single game that he had ever played throughout his entire life, he was Bob Boone's kid, and everyone was trying to come at him in probably the same way LeBron's kid has had to have everyone try to target him in AAU games and in college games because of who his dad is. And so it's just an interesting perspective. And Boone said, I don't want to go through that. And he's basically expressing just how I feel. And people can have their own feelings on this. I think it was curated. And yes, it's a cool moment, but it didn't feel as authentic as I wanted it to feel for me.
It would have never felt authentic because of the way he got into the NBA. So that right in itself, where the Lakers do draft him, no other team drafts him. Obviously, the Lakers are going to sit there, take him in the second round, and Rich Paul, a company, had basically called everybody shot and said, hey, look, don't draft him. We're going to take our talent to Australia, so don't draft him. And so they manipulated the draft, so all that was already set up. So we already knew at some point, hey, he's going to play with his dad. It's going to get done. And now, probably in the next week or so, he'll be with the South Bay Lakers All season long playing in the G League. So you got it out the way. Nobody has to talk about it. You don't have to let it hover and hover and hover all season long. You got it out the way. It happened at a time where the Lakers were rolling yesterday against the T-Wolves. So you snuck it in, and boom, you got it done. Now we don't have to talk about it no more.
Well, here's my bigger takeaway. It's Anthony Davis. My God, if that guy can ever just stay healthy for a full season. I mean, we know how great he is. And then conversely, I'm looking at Minnesota and that trade that they pulled off. You saw Cat in the opener, the first game against Boston, and then you see Julius Randle in games. It's one game. I don't want to make sweeping indictments on one game. I don't like the Julius Randle fit for them. I was skeptical going into it. Again, it's one game. I'm not going to make sweeping proclamations, but he's a ball pounder. I felt like Anthony Edwards went long stretches without touching the ball. It's an odd fit for me.
Yeah, now I was just telling the guys before the show, and even I thought this when the trade happened.
Yeah.
I think the trade getting Dante DiVincenzo is going to help them out big time. That's what I liked about the trade. Now, I was assuming that, hey, look, they're going to bring Julius Randle off the bench and let Naz Reid start, who has a better rapport with Anthony Edwards, has better rapport with Rudy Gobert, and he can stretch the floor and hit the three. Naz Reid is a special, special player. I'm not saying he's a superstar or a top 20 player, but Naz Reid on that basketball team alongside Jaden McDaniels fits what they want to do with Chris Finch. So I think Chris Finch, moving forward, at some point, he's going to have to just tell Julius Randle, hey, look, man, your best fit here is coming off the bench next to Dante DiVincenzo and giving our second unit a boost. You go and get second unit players and you can get yours. But the fit with Anthony Edwards, you can't. If you're Minnesota and you want to be at the top of the Western Conference, you don't have many games to play around with because Oklahoma City is going to be a problem. The Denver Nuggets, they smell blood. They look at that trade and say, ooh, no Carl Anthony Towns, cool. We don't have to deal with all those monsters up in Minnesota. So Minnesota doesn't have a lot of time to try to figure this out. I think bringing Julius Randle off the bench for that roster, which I assumed they were going to do anyway, but damn, they didn't, and you can see it. They were stuck in mud at times offensively in the New York Knicks' point of view. The screening by Isaiah Hartenstein is going to be missed for Jalen Brunson so much. Carl Anthony Towns is not a good screener like Hartenstein, who's now at OKC. So it's going to take the Knicks some time. I feel better about Minnesota than I do the New York Knicks after watching last night's games.
I would probably agree with you. I'm looking at it like you have all your Warrior gear on today, and I'm so excited for the Warriors. Like, boy, who knows what this season holds? And I'm just watching those games through the lens of a Warriors fan, and I'm saying to myself, all right, Boston is in a league of their own. They're fantastic and just a awesome team. I'm looking at these other teams and I'm like, I wonder how far away the Warriors are. Just like where they stack up. You know, they ended up basically being in the same spot as where the Lakers were last year, essentially a play-in team, right? And so, like, I don't think the Lakers have that much improved from last year. They feel like almost the exact same team. Can they stay healthy? We will see. I don't know about Minnesota. They were so good last year. It felt like they gave the Warriors fits, and the Warriors had their own problems. But I feel like they're a little more attainable. Like, they're a beatable team. Again, it's one game. I don't want to lose my mind. It's just, it feels like a lot is up in the air in the Western Conference, and I just don't know where the Warriors slot. I'm very optimistic. I'm just excited to see this new roster.
Didn't happen, so they had to pivot, and they pivoted to Buddy Hield, Kyle Anderson, and DeAnthony Melton, and the Let It Fly Warriors. It's going to be a lot of threes going up in Portland today, a lot of threes, so I'm excited as well to see how this plays out, to see what these combos look like, not so much the starting lineup, because it sounds like they're going to go big Shask with the starting lineup. It sounds like Wiggins is going to start at the two to start the season. Now, how long will Steve Kerr go with that? I have no idea, because he's got so many guys here. The only guys we know who are not going to be part of the rotation is Guy Santos, and Lindy Waters a third. That's it. Everything else is on the table. You may see GP2, Moses Moody. You're going to see everybody.
So can you rattle me off what the proposed starting lineup is? You said
it's Guy Santos and Lindy Waters a third. That's it. Everything else is on the table. You may see GP2, Moses Moody. You're going to see everybody.
So can you rattle me off what the proposed starting lineup is? You said Wiggins at the two.
So Wiggins at the two, Curry at the one, Draymond at the four, next to Kuminga at the three, and then Trayce Jackson-Davis at the five.
Interesting. That's very interesting. I wonder how long they roll. I'm sure they're going to have a variety of opening lineups. I wonder how long they roll with that. I mean, it could only be maybe 3 or 4 minutes, right? Like, we act like the starters play overlapping 40 minutes together, and it's just not the case.
No,
there's different combinations of lineups. So I'm just very excited. I want to see Melton. Like, I think Melton is a player that Warrior fans are going to learn to love.
Yeah, DeAnthony Melton, if he could stay healthy with the back injury that he suffered last year with the Philadelphia 76ers, this guy's a willing three-point shooter, but a willing defender. I'm interested to see. And who knows what the starting lineup is. Steve Kerr may switch it up. I mean, they had so many different starting lineups last season. They're not hell-bent on saying, hey, we're going to go with this. Depending on the matchup, we may see Melton start next to Stephen Curry. We may see Brandon Podziemski start next to Stephen Curry. Because the one thing that Stephen Curry does so well, it's playing off the ball. Playing off the ball. So if he's not, say if they go with this lineup with Wiggins, Kuminga, Trayce Jackson-Davis, and Draymond Green, alongside Stephen Curry, well, I expect Draymond to handle the ball a lot more. He'll be at the top of the key looking for Stephen Curry to come off multiple screens up from TJD, whether it's Kuminga or whatnot, and Andrew Wiggins. Now, with that lineup, the concern is shooting. Who's going to be able to knock down some jumpers outside? And you hope that Wiggins could do it, and Steve Kerr wants him to shoot more threes. You hope that Jonathan Kuminga could do it, whose shot has improved, but hasn't improved to the point where he feels comfortable just catching and shooting. So the if they do go with that lineup, my concern is the shooting. Can they hit some shots outside of Stephen Curry if they roll with that starting five?
Well, the other thing that I was thinking about was, like, Podziemski was a presumed starter, it felt like, for a lot of people. And the fact that he's not being, at least currently, not being kind of considered for a starting spot, I like that. I like him off the bench. I like him as a facilitator. Yep. I don't necessarily love him and Draymond both wanting to handle the ball with Curry on the, like, I don't know, it's just, to me, and I love Pods, but I just think the specific lineups that him and Draymond play with are very important.
No doubt. It is a Warriors Wednesday brought to you by Freeman's Appliance. Come see their full selection of in-stock luxury appliances and live working vignettes. Visit Freeman's Appliance in Pleasant Hill today. I love a good Warriors Wednesday as they open up the season in Portland today to take on the Trailblazers, who were 21-61 last year. And the Warriors starting off on the road, they had a really good road record last season, Shasky, going 25-16, and of course they went 17-4 in their last 21 road games last season. So starting away from home, they go to Salt Lake City Friday night, taking out the Portland Trailblazers tonight. A lot of fun there. But also, just going back to the Lakers and the Boston Celtics, obviously, ring night for the Boston Celtics, and those jackets look sweet, and the rings so look cool. fat, and they look like they're primed to go back-to-back. Jason Tatum's shot looks so much improved. Jaylen Brown's doing his thing. And then you look at the New York Knicks, and I don't know about the Knicks, but also the L.A. Lakers. I was very intrigued to see what J.J. Redick would do, what his style would be. I was a little impressed with J.J. Redick yesterday, Shasky.
What was so impressive? It felt like very similar to what I've seen before. I'm not hating. I'm just asking.
No, I thought they ran a lot more sets. I thought they ran a lot more sets for AD. I thought they looked a lot more organized. They looked like they knew what they were doing offensively instead of just saying, hey, AD and LeBron, let's run pick and rolls and let's run the shot clock down. I thought they ran actual offense yesterday. Okay. And very approved from Darvin Hebb.
No, it's interesting. I mean, like, I just think AD is underutilized in general, but there's also this, like, law of depreciation where, like, if you use him too much too early, you know he's going to wear down, right?
Yep.
He's just, I don't know. I'm always going to be an AD guy. He's going to always tantalize me with how great he is. And the question's always, like, can he stay healthy? You know what I mean? Like, I watched the USA team, and I'm just like, dude, he's an all-time player.
Anthony Davis is amazing.
He can do everything.
Anthony Davis is amazing, and that's why, you know, we're talking about LeBron rumors. It's like the guy to get from the Lakers is Anthony Davis. That's the guy I want. Street clothes or not, play 60 games. I love him in the Warriors uniform, but that's that. Let's break here. We'll continue to talk some hoops. I want to get your thoughts on the 49ers. You got your Niners hat on. They lose to the Chiefs for 3-4, and it is Cowboys week. It's a monster week. By the way, DeAndre Hopkins getting traded to Kansas City so they get their wide receiver. They were in on Cooper Kupp, but they didn't want to take on the salary of Cooper Kupp. They wanted to to take out more money. So Cooper Kupp could be on the move, but DeAndre Hopkins going from Tennessee and Will Levis and Mason Rudolph to Patrick Mahomes at Arrowhead Stadium.
Why is anyone doing a deal with the Kansas City Chiefs? It's Belichick zone for me. Stop dealing with the Chiefs.
Hey, you got to get compensation somewhere. That's the second deal the Titans and the Chiefs have done. Remember, the Titans traded for L'Jarius Sneed, and he's now in Tennessee, stuck there. And the Chiefs are undefeated. So more coming up on that. We'll talk some football. We'll talk some hoops. 888-957-9570 is the number. If you want to get into some Warriors conversation, we'll do all that. Coming up, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
All right, Dub Nation, it's Draymond Green. Tip-off is coming later today with the great Tim Roy. And then tune in to the Morning Roast tomorrow morning for the best Warriors coverage.
Let's go, Day-Day. Let's go. Warriors are opening up the season. 888-957-9570. We'd love to hear the expectations for Warrior fans that you have for this team coming up. The over-under for the Golden State Warriors this season is 43.5. Tell you right now, if I could bet, because I can't because of my partnership with the NBA, I would take the over.
Oh, that's shocking.
I would take the over. Block it up. 46 wins last year, Shasky. Cherry Mom missed 27 of them. 27 games. They were 13-14 in those games. By the way, Warriors were also 10-34 against the top 9 teams in the Western Conference. They got to improve on that. They were 10-34.
Wow.
Against, all right, so when we look at the standings from last season.
That's an incredible stat.
Yeah, last season. I was just, you know, getting my prep on and getting ready for the season and just kind of looking at some things from last year. So against Sacramento, New Orleans, the Lakers, the Suns, the Mavericks, the Clippers, the T-Wolves, the Nuggets, and the Thunder, the Warriors were a combined 10-34. They were 1-3 against OKC, 0-3 against Denver, or 0-4 against Denver, 0-3 against Minnesota. 1-3 against the Clippers. Were they 2-2 against the Clippers? I got to check my notes. And basically, 1-3 against the Suns, 2-2 against the Lakers, 1-2 against the Pelicans, and 2-2 against even up with the Kings. So they were not good against teams over 500 in the Western Conference.
So here, let me give you an analogy. Yesterday, you know, I went to go open up my laptop because I'm going to work from home for a couple days, and I said to myself, man, this thing is so slow. It's buffering. I've got all this, like, malware stuff on it. I got to do a factory reset. I got to just wipe the whole entire thing clean, and I just got to start from scratch. And today, I opened up the laptop, and it's working great. and it's just boom, boom, boom. It's humming. Yay. I'm doing a factory reset, a Men in Black wiping of the memory when it comes to the last couple of years with the Warriors. I don't want to go backwards. As a Warrior fan, I just want to start fresh. We've only got maybe one, two, three, maybe 4 years of Steph Curry left. Like, I'm just kind of going week to week, month to month with this thing. We've got an entirely
you say
new
that
bench.
Now.
What's that?
You say that now.
What do
it
you mean?
Sounds so good.
What? I mean, look, let's just call it what it is. There's a lot more oxygen on this team, and it feels like everybody is starting fresh. Like, seeing Moses Moody take a team-friendly deal, I think that's good for the player. I think that's good for the team. I think that's good for maneuverability. I think it kind of settles some stuff for Moses Moody, and he's not pressing. You obviously have the Kuminga stuff that's kind of lingering out there. Let's see what ends up happening with Andrew Wiggins. Let's see what's going to happen with Trayce Jackson-Davis and Brandon Pajemski and their ascension, and you know what kind of Draymond do you get this year? I don't necessarily think it's fair for me as a Warrior fan to go back to last year because they feel very different.
They are very different, and it is a fresh start. And I think people, when they look at last year's team or the year before, there was a lot of smoke behind the scenes. There was a lot of things happening, obviously, starting with training camp and Draymond Green and Jordan Poole, which Draymond Green touched on with Mark Spears in Anscape, an affiliate of ESPN. And Draymond just basically said, you know, I've got to do better, man. I've missed out on a lot of moments the past couple years because of his own undoing and kind of separating himself from the team. And so overall, as I was talking to Dalton Johnson yesterday and talking to other, you know, we're going to talk to Anthony Slater, vibes. And look, vibes doesn't translate to wins. We think of vibes. We think of Marquette. Hey, he's good for vibes in the clubhouse. Well, what does that mean? Does it mean wins? What, I mean, are you winning or are you losing? But it does feel like the synergy, and they're a little more together coming out of the gate this training camp than they have been the last couple years. Obviously, with the Jordan Poole and Draymond situation, last year's the Clay extension, what's going to happen with him? Everybody was nauseated with Chris Paul, whether or not he's going to come off the bench. It just didn't feel like they were together as one coming out of the last two training camps, at least for this season, as they headed up to Portland yesterday, and they're right now going to practice in a PDX and get ready for shoot-around and get ready for the Portland Trailblazers later on tonight. They do feel a lot more together. Everybody seems to know their roles on this team. Now, Steve Kerr's going to have to tinker with the rotations or whatnot, but at least for the second unit, Buddy Hield knows what he's doing. Kyle Anderson knows what his role is. Kevon Looney knows what his role is. When Brandon Pajinski plays, whether he starts to come off the bench, he knows what his role is, which is to facilitate and get everybody involved to make sure that ball is hopping around. So it is a fresh start for the Golden State Warriors, and that's why they went to Hawaii to kind of cleanse themselves in the last two seasons, Shasky. And so I think they're ready to roll. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean 45 wins? Does it mean 46? Well, I keep saying this, and I'm saying it all season long. And the other day, player told me, Bonte, we're winning 50. So, hey, you know what? They may win 50. By the way, you'll love this, Shasky, at Levi Stadium. I'm getting off the field. I run into Kirk and Joe Lacob and their entourage.
Wait a minute. Is this a King's Tale?
No, it's a quick one. It's a quick one. It's a quick one.
Hear ye, hear ye.
I didn't want to do
quiet
that.
Quiet down, quiet down. The king has something to say. Your Majesty, could you please tell us a king's tale from your travels across the realm?
Oh, the king's tale. What is the king's tale?
I didn't vote for you.
Ah, king's tale. So, you know, Sunday was a lot of fun for you, boy, Shask. I'm sorry you had to miss the game, but
hearing you boast for the last 2 days.
No, I haven't been boasting, really.
And then I saw Baldy. Hey, and then I went into Baldy's booth, and me and him had a one-on-one.
Hey, we did a lot of things here. This is warm, man. This smells like a blanket right now. Because I can go to sleep. It's all cozy. But, you know, walking in Levi's, and I'm making rounds, and you know what I'm saying? I'm doing my due diligence, right? Because a lot of people like to talk, and I like to find out what's what, right? So I just happened to go back and walking back to the press box, and what do you know? There's Joe Lacob to my left, and Kirk. Kirk's got his Niner shirt on. Joe's got his beard. He's got the polo. But Joe, man, Uncle Joey Gordon Beard out, man. Come on, man. I'm day-to-day with this thing. But let me tell you, I think people are sleeping on us. I feel really good about this team. Really good. And so I'll leave the conversation there. There are some other things said that are a little off the record that I won't divulge to our audience. I'm sorry. Sorry, I can't do it. I like to keep things tight. But they feel really good about this team this year, Shasky. And I think they do feel like they can win 50 and sneak up on some people. I mean, they won 46 last year, and they look clunky. It did. I mean, honestly, they won 46 games last season. Now, there's a lot of bad teams in the league that weren't trying to win. But hey, Joe Lacob and Kirk, they all feel good because they know they have financial flexibility. They have an opportunity to maneuver. And it's known they were big game hunting. whether it was Paul George, Lowry Markkanen is my king. My crown fell off there. I guess the king's tail's over. But they feel good about the team. So everybody's got a fresh start.
You know what's unfair, Bonte? I feel like at any moment, if we start breaking down what happened last year, inevitably, fair or not, however you perceive it, it feels like you're taking a shot at Klay Thompson. Not you. I'm saying the individual talking about last year. It's just, I think a lot of the rhetoric about last year and everything about last year is pointing fingers at someone or, you know, Wiggins or Chris Paul or
Klay
Thompson.
Right?
And I'm not saying that we can't go back and talk about some things that happened last year. I know for me, I think it's healthy and fresh to just move on. You know what I mean? And kind of just diagnose what we're seeing now. I think we spent a lot of time last year talking about the year prior, which was Jordan Poole and 2022 and how can they replicate this? And I think the one thing that I've really enjoyed when I've listened to Steve Kerr talk, he feels reinvigorated.
Yeah.
He feels like he's already turned the page. I feel like a lot of the players have turned the page. And so for the sake of not disrespecting an all-time Warrior legend in Klay Thompson and an NBA legend in Chris Paul and some of the other guys, I just think it's healthier for everyone if we just move on.
I think we have. I don't think anybody really has harped on last season. I think we've kind of stayed away from the Warriors and what's happened last season. I think in our conversation so far this year, maybe tell me if I'm wrong, it's been about what this team could look like. It's been about what this philosophy would be like, what they're going to play like offensively, what they could be defensively, how great Looney looks. Like, he's in phenomenal shape. Kevon Looney changed his body. I mean, wow.
Did you see the last game that they played that was on television, he hit two, like, free throw extended like jumpers early in the shot clock, and I go, wow.
Hey, he could shoot, man. I'm telling you. Looney and media day. Bonte, you and Bully always tell me to shoot it, man. I'm going to shoot that thing. Looney can shoot. Like, it sounds crazy, right?
No,
I watch him in pregame warm-up hit that shot all day long. I'm like, dude, you got it open. Just let it fly. They're giving him this bonus treatment. Well, you know what? Shoot that shot. That shot's going to be available for him this year. So I don't think anybody's – I think everybody has been eager to move on from last season because last season ended in Sacramento in a play-in game. And it was ugly. And they got blown out of the gym. And that wasn't the Warriors. Come on, man. Sacramento? Like, really? Losing to Sacramento like that? So – everybody has turned a page. It's been a long off season. All the noise about trading for this guy and that guy, that's all died down. Now they got their roster. And look, they are open to still investing. Kind of like John Lynch and the 49ers, where they're always looking for a trade. They say the phones never, the phones always work around here in Santa Clara. It's always going to ring. Well, the same thing with the Lakers. Same thing with Dunleavy. And I think they did a great job of not panicking and mortgaging all those assets for Lowry Market. And again, Danny Ainge wanted Podzimski and Kuminga and Moody and three first-round picks. No, hell no. We're not going to do that. Wait a second. Chill. Let this team play out here, and then let's see what happens at the deadline or maybe in the offseason. So I like where the Warriors are at. We have turned a page, Shasky. There's no doubt.
Yeah, I just think it's healthy for everyone, and it'll give you an opportunity to enjoy the season. Like, the biggest question for me on this team is just – what are the realistic overlapping numbers for Kuminga and Wiggins on the floor? How effective can they coexist simultaneously? And if they can't, then what are the combinations around those two to where they can hit their maximum? Because I don't see a scenario where they're their best version, the Warriors, without really big seasons from Wiggins and Kuminga. It's not either or. To me, it's both.
Yep, no doubt. 888-957-9570. What's your biggest question when it comes to the Golden State Warriors this season? What is your biggest question mark that you have? 888-957-9570. It is a Warriors Wednesday brought to you by Freedman's Appliance, and that's coming up. Brought to you by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises.
I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I can sit here and do a sugarcoat job.
Like that, Mr. Bonte.
Bay Area, this is Jonathan Kuminga. You're listening to The Morning Roast with Bonte Hill and Joe Shasky on 95.7 The Game. Take it away, Bonte.
All right, JK, can't wait to see you tonight up in Portland now. He didn't get his extension. when the deadline came and went Monday at, 12 o'clock Pacific time, I believe, Moses Moody got the three-year, $39 million extension, a very team-friendly deal, a good deal for Moses Moody. And, of course, Jonathan Kuminga is playing for big money. They were far apart on the deal. You know, Kuminga's betting on himself, and I'm not mad at that as well. If he plays well, he's going to get compensated very, very well. So shout out to JK. And the Warriors are going to start the season 8-8 up in Portland. 888-957-9570 is the number. Biggest question marks for the Golden State Warriors. What are the questions you have about this year's roster? How excited are you about it? It's opening night in the NBA. We saw it last night. We'll see it tonight again and all through the week. Hold on one second. This segment is sponsored by Golden State Lumber, serving the Bay Area for three generations. When you succeed, we succeed. Visit GoldenStateLumber.com. Real quick, before we get back into the Warriors, Shasky, because I know you're a big baseball fan. We all love baseball. Fernando Valenzuela passed away last night. Dodger great. the Rookie of the Year in 1981 and a Cy Young Award winner. 20 complete games. I mean, 8 shutouts that spectacular season. 2-time World Series champion. What he meant for Mexico, what he meant for the Dodgers, and he brought Mexico and the Dodgers together. Lost a legend last night, man. Even though he was a Dodger, everybody knows who Fernando Valenzuela is.
You know, we talk about Linsanity. Imagine, you know, actually being great. Like, I'm not trying to rip Jeremy Lin. Like, Fernando Mania was one of the great sports nicknames of all time when it comes to the passion for an entire country and in him representing an entire kind of people in this country and outside of this country, and what he meant for the influx of baseball and playing on that team, the Dodgers, at that time. I mean, yeah, and it's the way that he pitched with the flair. I mean, he was you know, obviously a little before our time, but everybody knew who Fernando Valenzuela was. You know, you say that name and it's synonymous with just the white hot love of the Dodgers in Southern California. And I think that he represents that fan base in a variety of ways, very much in the same way Timmy represented San Francisco during a particular moment in time. Doesn't, like, when you close your eyes and you think about Fernando Valenzuela, don't you think of what he represented to the Southern California fan base?
Absolutely. I mean,
for probably more so.
More so. No, absolutely. Fernando Mania, watching that 30 for 30 on ESPN a few years back when they released it, you know, because as you mentioned, you know, we were born in 1982. During the height of his powers, 4 years old, 3 years old, but I don't remember. I remember watching him pitch later on in his career, but he wasn't the Fernando Valenzuela that took the league by storm. And so he did throw a no-hitter in 1990 against the St. Louis Cardinals. But damn, like, this guy, you watch it 30 for 30, he had that place rocking. And then they bring him back as a color commentator on a Spanish broadcast team back in 03. And I didn't know this. He had to step away before the playoffs due to health issues, which ultimately, unfortunately, led to his death last night. So we lost a legend last night. Lost a legend right before this iconic World Series between the Dodgers and the Yankees.
Yeah, I mean, as we kind of opened the show, and I was a little tongue-in-cheek, but we're talking about, you know, sports and a meritocracy and all that. It's the great equalizer, you know? Like, are you big or tall? Are you fat or skinny? Are you buff or not? Like, can you play? You know what I mean? I think that's why I love sports at its core, is it just doesn't discriminate. Like, are you a baller or not? Yep. Fernando Valenzuela was an absolute baller. There was a point in time he was the biggest star in sports.
Yep, that's crazy. Isn't it crazy? That is wild. He took the league by storm in that market in LA. You look at his 17 years in the big leagues, 173 and 153, 3.54 ERA, over 2,000 strikeouts. I mean, wow.
To go as long as he did, at, if you go a decade in Major League Baseball and your ERA is under 3.6, you know how good you are?
Yeah, no doubt.
I think that we've kind of gotten diluted to some of the numbers. These guys, just from that era and that particular time when baseball was king, it was a little prior to the NFL taking over as king. And obviously, like, the NBA was just starting to, you know, really take off in the 80s.
Yep.
Like, baseball was the number one sport, and he was one of its number one stars.
No doubt. Yeah, early 80s. Think about L.A. They have Fernando Valenzuela. You have Magic Johnson, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You get the Raiders a couple years later. You had the Rams out there. And then you get Marcus Allen, who was at USC, who's a star in his own right out there. I mean, Roddy Lott was just leaving.
Bo Jackson.
Yeah, later on in the 80s. But, you know, right there in that early 80s, 80, 81, 82, 83, they had a litany of stars down in L.A. So rest in peace to Fernando Valenzuela as he passes away at the age of 63. Really sad.
A part of me thought you were going to come in with Yankee gear on today.
Well, that'll be Friday. I'll wear my Yankee hat.
Bandwagon Bonte, I want you to just full disclosure here. All right. Don't try to curate this answer. You are happy that it's Dodgers Yankees just because it's two big brands. Because if I was running Major League Baseball, I'd be thrilled with who was in the World Series.
Who wouldn't be happy about this? When you look at the Cleveland Guardians fought hard. It was a hell of a story. Honestly, I'm a sports fan, so it really didn't matter to me, honestly, whether or not. If it was Cleveland and, say, the Mets, I would have been locked in. I would have been locked in because Cleveland hasn't won a World Series since when? How long has it been since Cleveland? 1948?
I think so, 48 or 49.
Because they lost to the Giants in 54. They haven't won a championship in a very long time.
In 97, did they lose to the Marlins?
They lost to the Marlins in Game 7. Yeah. And, of course, they lost to the Cubs in 2016.
Also, in 95, they lost to the Braves.
They lost to the Braves in 95. Wow. And they had a lot of runs. Gosh. So if Cleveland advanced, I would have had no problem watching Jose Ramirez in the World Series. That's just me.
But as a fan of the sport from afar, you would agree for the casuals.
For the casuals, yeah, no doubt. This is big time.
Two epicenter cities. Are these the two biggest brands in the sport?
Yes, absolutely. Dodgers, Yankees, yeah, no doubt.
The Sox are up there. Yeah,
they haven't been to the playoffs in like 5 or 6 years.
It's the two biggest players in the sport, too.
Yeah, Ohtani and Judge. Ohtani and Judge on the same diamond.
The first time since 2012 that the quote-unquote reigning MVPs are facing themselves off in the World Series.
Yeah, Buster Posey and Miguel Cabrera. Yeah. Tigers, Giants. Who had that? Somebody gave that to me. That was Spadoni? Okay, I stole it from
did
them.
You have that, Spadoni,
yeah,
earlier? Spadoni had that.
I quizzed him the other day.
Yeah, he quizzed me the other day. It was good stuff. But, no, you get Ohtani and Judge. You get Stanton. Did Stanton grow up in Southern California? If I'm not mistaken,
I know. Giancarlo has changed his name so many times.
But he hit one out of Dodger Stadium when he was with the Miami Marlins. This is box office, and you get the memory. See, that's why I love the Lakers Celtics playing in 2008 and 2010 with Kobe and KG, because I missed those Lakers Celtics series. We were so young, Shasky, we missed most of those. We missed Yankees-Dodgers in the late 70s. We missed Yankees-Dodgers in 81, where George Steinbrenner went crazy because Dave Winfield couldn't hit anything, and Reggie Jackson and company lost the World Series to the Dodgers. Now we get this back, so all those memories, all those historic names that we saw in the late 70s and early 80s between these two clubs, all those highlights are going to be replayed during this World Series, and you get the Bronx, Yankee Stadium, you get Dodger Stadium, you get both the pinstripes and that Dodger blue. Hell yeah, I'm fired up for this World Series. And I want to see the Yankees win. Yeah. Damn, I don't want the Dodgers winning. And I think they are, but I'm going for Judge.
Well, I think it's win-win if you're a Giants fan regardless, because this has to send a huge message to just the Giants front office and ownership, and I'm sure they're well aware. They don't need this message, but like the team that you measure yourself against is in a World Series right now, and the top six payrolls in baseball all made the playoffs. So I know you had a very large payroll last year, but you got to put your money where your mouth is, and you have to make mega moves in the next couple of years to compete with these big boys.
Damn, this is a good series. You're excited about the series? Come on.
I'm really excited.
You don't need to be a bandwagon fan.
Look, as a fan of baseball, like, Mookie Betts plays the game the way it should be played. Aaron Judge plays the game the way it should be played. I'm not trying to be one of those guys like, oh, you got to play the game. No, but like, there's a reason these guys are so good. They're five-tool players who hit for power, contact, average. They do the small things. They run the bases well. They play great defense. They're versatile. They can play multiple positions. I mean, Freddie Freeman's out there with one leg. Yeah. You know, like, I'm not a huge Freddie Freeman fan, but I respect it, you know? And then I see like Carlos Rodon for the Yankees. I like Carlos Rodon. I liked him as a Giant. I'm rooting for him. I know we're throwing ticker tape or parades for him going 4 1/3, but like the reality is when he's on, he's electric. So there are players on both sides that I truly respect. I hate the Dodgers.
But they scored their most runs in an NLCS series, right? All time. I think they scored the most runs. They were just putting it on the Mets. Mookie Betts was phenomenal. Max Muncy broke a record for how many consecutive appearances where he either walked or got a hit. What was it, like 13 straight plate appearances where he got on base or something like that? It's just insane. And then you get Shohei Ohtani, who was just killing the ball with runners in scoring position. So I think it's going to be a lot of runs scored in this series. What pitching staff can hold up? What pitching staff could hold up in the midst of these big? Because Juan Soto, I know you don't like it when you want him to get in the batter's box.
Well, it's a joke. It's more of a joke.
No. But the way he intimidated that pitcher from the Guardians before he hit that shot. Come on, man. That was and he's nodding his head in between pitches, like, okay, I see you. I'm on this. I'm like, who does that? The swagger was through the roof with Juan Soto.
There was a Bonds-like quality where you're like, if he comes in with the specific fastball right here, it's yard. Like, you know it's coming. And you see this with Doval from times like, oh my God, he can't get a slider over for a strike. Like, he has to go in with the fastball, and this guy's going to crush him. And sometimes you get away with it, sometimes you don't. Against the truly great players, they do what he did, which is, I'm going three-run, big yard bomb. That's just... Yeah, he's amazing. He's going to get $500 million, the fact that Giants fans think we have a chance is laughable.
Well, you know what? Just offer him $80 to $100 million a year. That's it.
Why would I want to leave that lineup?
I mean, he's not leaving that lineup. Hunter Gaddis, who was on the mound during that, and he had Soto on a 1-2 count, Hunter Gaddis did, and Soto's just not in the whole time. Okay, I see you. I'm following that off. Okay, I see you. And a dramatic home run. And you get John Sterling in a booth for WFAN. It's wonderful. I mean, the way he broke into that with the camera was next level. And he's bored to be. I'm telling you, Chasky. It changed my life going to see him in that pinstripe.
It changed my life.
No, I swear to God.
He's wonderful. Marvelous.
He is marvelous. The swagger. When he trotted out the right field that day on a Sunday afternoon against the Colorado Rockies out of all teams. And it was bat day for the Yankees. And the day before they had Old Timers Day. So Yankee fans were filling themselves. He trotted out the right field. And the reception he gets every time he trots out the right field in Yankee City, I said, there's no way this guy's leaving. I'm never going to even mention that the Giants should offer him $80 to $100 million a year. I'm not going to do that to myself. He's not leaving that place. He was born. He looks perfect in pinstripes. You know, guys who just look perfect in a uniform. Like, Deion's one of those players who can look good in any uniform, right? Juan Soto's probably one of those players, but in that Yankee pinstripe, in those road grays with the blue New York, they got rid of the white piping on it. Juan Soto is perfect in Yankee uniform, man. And box office. So I'm excited for the series. Yankees, Dodgers, Shasky, this is what we want, right?
Yeah, no doubt this is what we want. Can I get some stuff off my chest? It's been a couple days, and I feel like I haven't had an opportunity to just vent.
Well, that's your fault. You got sick.
It's a variety of things.